everybody, and welcome to this, the latest episode of The Power Trip here on the Suplex Retweet Extra Feed. I'm your host, Stephen Wilson, and as always, I am joined by Scott McLeod. Scott, how's it going?
I've been better, Stephen. You know, you miss one session of Mongolian karate and you go down a dan.
You go down a dan?
Yes.
Oh, jeez, man. So what does that put you at?
Just a one dan, like... Oh, one dan karate. I feel like a right loser. I was so prepared to be a three dan, and I was much like Shooter Stevens. And then, unless you miss 1 week with one session, and you go right back down again.
It's a rigorous schedule with Mongrovian karate. You know, it's all about commitment, and apparently 1 week off, and that's classed a lack of commitment.
I know. They won't even try to explain it to the question mark, but he's a harsh but fair sensei.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we are here, as always, to talk about NWA Power, and it was their first show since they had their last pay-per-view Hard Times a few weeks ago, so we're going to catch up with all the latest from NWA Power in the weeks since Hard Times. But before we do that, please go onto our social medias and follow us. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Suplex Retweet. Subscribe to us here on the Suplex Retweet Extra Feed and on our main feed, Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet, where you can get so much great podcast content. Right, Scott, best to start from the top here and talk about the main feud going on in NWA. It's one that we talked about in previous shows and it continues on after Hard Times. We've got the latest in the feud between Nick Aldis and Marty Scurll, following on from Hard Times, where Nick Aldis got a victory over one of Marty's Villain Enterprise cohorts and Flip Gordon.
Mm-hmm. I know, I really enjoyed that match at Hard Times. I was surprised that it wasn't the main event, although I think given that pay-per-view was more about the crowning of the TV champion, it made sense that it wasn't the main event. Mm-hmm. I think what kind of took away from it at some points is the believability that Gordon would win, because back before All In, there was a small part of us that thought he would win, because that would be his way onto the All-In card, because the whole story was he couldn't get booked, Cody wouldn't allow it. Yeah. But this just felt like a kind of a stopgap before the inevitable match between Nick Aldis and Marty.
Yeah, what I've kind of liked about these last 3 weeks of shows is between the last two pay-per-views, Marty wasn't actually on the programme much. He had that one interview segment, the first Power after the pay-per-view, and then we didn't really see him since, but he was at the tapings, and he has been pretty much a regular on the show, which is obviously helping build towards the match, which looks like he's going to happen now at the Crockett Cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I like that they're saying it's a year on from their last match, because they fought the 2019 Crockett Cup, so it's kind of coming full circle. I like the fact that they're using this Ring of Honor relationship as well to further the story, because if something's not happening with Marty and Nick on anyway, Power, they'll show a recap of something that happened at Ring of Honor, like when they had that tag match of Roosh and Nick Aldis v PCO and Marty at Free Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And the way they're kind of booking this whole thing, it's quite good, the fact that you alluded to the match they had at the Crockett Cup last year, so kind of Nick Aldis doesn't feel like he needs to fight Marty. Obviously, mm-hmm. He doesn't think Marty's worthy enough of it, and we're kind of getting that sort of bit of desperate on the part of Marty, but the fact that Aldis wants it to be big money to receive, and Marty Scurll's opened up his checkbook, he's put out 500,000, was it pounds or dollars? I can't really remember, of a cash offer.
Yeah, I think it's it's $500,000. I think they put it in dollars, but I think they're using that as kind of a reference to, like, everybody's aware of this big money deal that Marty signed with Ring of Honor, because Ring of Honor were so desperate to kind of keep him. So yeah, I think it's like all this has been kind of saying, like, I beat Marty before, so he's like making Marty like either accept the offer that he actually had or counter, and Marty did. So basically, it's a case of all this, like, I don't need to beat you, so you need to prove, like, to me that this is a match worth having. Whereas on Marty's side, it's a case of kind of unfinished business.
Yeah, I think I've found that the two of them have been quite well matched on the mic. I think they've both got very equal skills in terms of that set. They've both improved so much in that area of their game. So we're not obviously going to see them wrestle too much between now and the Crockett Cup, but it's good that they took their promos are hitting very well as well to build this match.
Yeah, definitely. It's not really a feud that needs that much physicality between the two, like, in the lead up to it. And as you said, both men are very skilled in the mic. I mean, Aldis, as I said before, his work as a heel on the mic is far superior to his face work. So I think just continuing on the track that they're going, I think so. The match has already got a lot of anticipation behind it.
Yeah, I mean, I think actually quite a big part of this particular show that we're going to be doing here is going to talk a lot about some fantastic mic work. And one guy, not the obvious one that we'll talk about a bit later on, but one guy who so far in NWA has shown great fire and produced some great promos on the mic. We're talking about Mama Storm's favourite son himself, Tim Storm. Scott, as much as Tim Storm has been great in NWA, I think in this whole period that we're talking about, the last 3 weeks of show, he was probably involved in one of the less top quality segments in the history of the show so far, when they brought out Mama Storm, even though it was not really Mama Storm. What was your thoughts on that particular segment?
I remember all of the, Joe Galley got a thing in his earpiece basically saying that Mama Storm was going to come out, and he bought it, and we all thought that Mama Storm was going to, even though you knew something was going to happen. But what I love with the crowd in the NWA studios is that when they heard Mama Storm was coming out, the crowd popped as if Austin was about to come out, because somehow Mama Storm has gotten over than half the roster in NWA, and then obviously it was clearly not her, and people were chanting "Fight your mum," because they wanted to see Tim Storm beat up this guy that was pretending to be his mum.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a bit of a cheap move. I think it was a bit of cheap heat. I think in a way it didn't really. I think if they were gonna use the fact that Tim Storm keeps talking about his mum, I think it should come at the point that she maybe comes out if he was to win some sort of championship, or maybe even get a win over Nick Aldis somewhere down the line. But to use it in kind of like a throwaway segment here, I don't know. I thought it was a wee bit cheap, in my opinion.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's okay. I think you expect for like a WWE, because like you had them do like the Lashley Sisters thing a few years ago. But
yeah,
it's been a weird few weeks for Tim Storm, because he was involved in that TV title tournament, and then he got a bye in the first round because Anderson like wasn't able to make the event. And I think you could tell that was kind of legitimate, because obviously if like it wasn't, then they'd probably just get someone in to replace him. But the fact that like he just went through getting a bye, even though he's a face, and you wouldn't expect a face to get a bye in a one-night tournament. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a kind of a rush job, because obviously they probably thought, well, it's kind of a last-minute thing with Anderson, because I heard some people assuming, well, it's because he decided to do that TNA one-night-only like reunion show. But then Scott Steiner was on Hard Times, and he's at that show, so...
Yeah. Well, the less we talk about Scott Steiner at Hard Times, I think the better in this particular thing. We'll talk about it very briefly. We've not really talked too much about Hard Times. How bad was that match?
Oh, I was enjoying the pay-per-view a lot up until that point. I mean, I wasn't expecting a Matt Classic by any standards, but I thought Aaron Stevens and the Question Mark have been brilliant so far. And you always expect some craziness whenever Scott Steiner shows up. Yeah. And then it was just so boring. I mean, the only good thing was like the storytelling that will probably lead to at the end was like Question Mark kind of being thrown to the wheels and getting put in the Steiner recliner, which the older Steiner gets, it looks like the less pressure he's putting on the move. While Stevens just ran away and left the Question Mark to get beat up. So obviously they address that on an episode of Power, so you know that's going to come, like they're going to come to blows maybe at some point.
Yeah, we've talked in the past on this show about how the Rock and Roll Express are kind of guys who have came back for a quick pop, but they're not really guys you should be seeing wrestling in 2019 at that point, now 2020. Would you think that Scott Steiner falls into that bracket as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, have him come in and do a couple of like spots, but I don't think he's a guy you want to come in wrestling regularly. I mean, let him cut promos as often as he wants, because that's always entertaining, but maybe cut down on the wrestling.
Yeah, definitely. Back to Tim Storm. They kind of seem to be having him kind of feuding with Nick Aldis' stable, the Strictly Business stable, without him getting physical with Aldis himself. Could you see... I mean, we've got obviously the match of the Crockett Cup that we talked about between Marty and Nick Aldis. If Aldis was to drop the belt, could you then see Tim Storm renewing the feud with Nick Aldis? Maybe have him have some sort of match at the Crockett Cup that gets him a shot?
Possibly, because pretty soon Aldis eventually drops the title, you're going to need to have challengers aside. Also, eventually Aldis is going to have to move away from that main event scene for a while. Mm-hmm. So it would be good to give him something to do. They've got that natural history then. Obviously, they can get around the fact that Storm can't challenge the title because the title wouldn't be on the line. But yeah, like, as you said, like, it just seems to be a case where like, they're keeping this feud going, even though like it doesn't feel like there's much left to do. Like, he's feuding with the likes of, like, he faced Tom Latimer a week before he was. that you would think you'd be like focusing on titles he can win at the moment, like the national or the TV title.
Yeah, you think so? I think he just wants to kind of, I think he's fed up with the whole, the way that all this kind of took him out all those weeks ago. So I think he's maybe wanting a bit of revenge in that type of aspect. I think if it goes to him and Aldis, it'll just be like a grudge match more than anything. And then we could maybe see him moving on to some sort of title picture, whatever title it may be, who knows. But
yeah, because as I said, he had that match with Latimer, and also the story there being that Camille would be at ringside, and Camille also a few weeks ago when the Strickland is officially formed, hit that spear on Tim Storm, which he hasn't forgotten about.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we mentioned obviously that Tim Storm has been great on promos of all throughout his time so far with NWA Power. One man, however, on episode 17 during this period, cut a promo which set the whole wrestling world talking. Eddie Kingston, with that promo on the Pope. It's amazing seeing the Pope on bombing NWA Power. Not if you've listened to this for the first time, we are talking about the former Elijah Buck, not the actual Pope himself. Scott, Eddie Kingston, he's a guy we know, great on the mic, surefire whenever he gets there. There was a point last year when WWE had Evolve on the network and some people were feared for how WWE would react with Eddie Kingston and a live mic. This was sheer emotion from Eddie Kingston, and even though he's not done a lot on NWA so far, you feel like you're invested in a feud that involves the Dawsons.
Yeah, definitely, because like, I think if you follow Eddie Kingston for any point in his career, you know how good he is on the mic. And this was a case of like, we weren't sure when he came to NWA Power, like, he'd probably give him some creative freedom, but we don't know how far he'd be able to go in his promos. And then when he cut that promo, you seem like, okay, they're letting him like use his real life, the stuff he really believed it, because he made a point that that's real. And so like, that's what I like with some of these promos, that it's really authentic. And like you said, we're buying into this feud with the Dawsons, because it seems weird that Homicide hasn't been around that long. I think he is legit injured. So it's really getting invested to have Homicide and Kingston get back together and collectively beat up Pope. And oh, I see, I like where the direction this feud's going now, because before, I didn't know what the whole point of the Pope being with Eddie Kingston that was, because whenever Pope does his promos now, it just seems like he's doing a very poor imitation of Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, it's good to see them having a bit of a direction with this one. I kind of say it was a good bit. There's some good nods from Kingston's promos as well to a lot of the guys who are in other promotions doing well. Obviously, they've got like LAX or Proud and Powerful, as they're known now, and AEW. But what this promo and feud has kind of introduced there is we're starting to see the introduction of some of the guys from Ring of Honor. Because there is obviously, as we've, it's pretty clear to see since Marty's came back into NWA, the relationship with Ring of Honor is clear there. And we've now seen the Beer City Bruisers getting involved in this one. And we've got a big old slugfest type idea between them and the Dawsons in this latest episode.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that, because I watched them, you know, like, if you tuned in to the NWA back in its heyday and you flicked on, there was a tag match on, it would probably look a lot like this kind of match. So I like that kind of the feel of it, because these are two teams that feel very much NWA. And I think I like the fact that the Ring of Honor guys that they're bringing in, they're not just bringing in anybody. They're bringing in guys that they think fit with what they're going for on NWA. Like, they had these guys come in, they had Dan Math on Hard Times, who I loved, because you got to see him run through Zicky Dice, who played his part perfectly. And then you got to have the big Hoss fight with Trevor Murdoch, which I'd like to see again soon.
Yeah, definitely. The Beer City Bruisers are a great example of a tag team who kind of fit the NWA mould. And at Hard Times, we did see new tag team champions crowned in Eli Drake and James Storm. Could you see this kind of... We've talked in past episodes at the points with the Rock and Roll Express for the tag champions, how you didn't feel like the company were taking the division seriously. Could you see this being a bit of a reboot in terms of that one, maybe taking that a bit more seriously now?
I definitely think so, because they've got the Crockett Cup as their next pay-per-view, and that is basically built around tag team wrestling, and NWA has a great history of tag teams. I think they're really leaning on that now, because the Rock and Roll Express, up until they had that main event on the most recent episode of Power against Aldis and Royce Isaacs, they hadn't really been featured on Power since Hard Times. So part of me, before the announcement of that match, thought they were kind of being like shifted off to the side, but they're still kind of a part of it. They could be in the Crockett Cup, who knows, but I was surprised, but also quite glad to see Eli Drake and James Storm win the tag titles, because it's a different team then, like, they've been focused on the first few weeks of Power, and ever since then they've been like a great team with the crazy, something maybe a bit intoxicated James Storm cutting these wild promos while you've got straight man Eli Drake.
Mm-hmm. It'd be good if we'd seen the crazy drunk James Storm versus Christmas drunk with Christmas drunk Eli Drake.
That'd be cool. Because I remember they had that segment where they got the Crockett Cup out, like they had the TV title kind of next to the commentary table, and they had the Hard Times. They had it there, and they had the Beer City Bruisers and James Storm pouring beer into it, and then some hockey teams that would do when they win the Stanley Cup, and like Stu Bennett going, did nobody tell James Storm you're only meant to do that if you've won it?
Yeah, great. Stu Bennett's been a great addition on the commentary booth over these last few months as well. I mean, obviously, Mr. Cornette, you said it wasn't as intolerable as you'd like, but since Stu's came in, we forgot that Cornette was there.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, he's been a vast improvement because even though he's not got the same years of experience, when he says stuff, it makes sense and he feels like he adds a lot. And I love, the question mark came out, he finally spoke something, words that we can actually understand. He said to Trevor Murdoch, you, me, karate. And then Stu Bennett just, with no, completely deadpan, just went, what could it mean?
They do a decent wee bit of deadpan actually on the show. They're quite good at kind of mixing things about. We talked there about the tag team division, how at one point we were saying that they've not kind of booked that properly as well. There was another division as well we weren't quite sure about. In the early days of NWA Power, and it was the women's division. But since we last did a show, obviously the Hard Times pay-per-view, we've saw both a great title match at the pay-per-view between Allison Kay and Thunder Rosa, which led to a title change. We saw a fantastic, not quite as good, but a brilliant rematch a couple of weeks ago as well. And as a result, we've kind of seen a wee bit more of a dissension in the kind of trio of Marty Bell, Melina, and Thunder Rosa. Scott, we've talked in the past about how Thunder Rosa seems to be very, very popular with the NWA crowd. She's very popular with the NWA support online as well. Do you think it's a case of the guys in the back have kind of seen this and thought we need to kind of pull the trigger and maybe start to make her more of a face character?
I think so. I think it's only a matter of time. I mean, I've been really looking forward to talking about the match at Hard Times on this show, because I agree with you, the rematch on NWA Power wasn't as good, but the match at Hard Times, I think, was probably match of the night for that entire pay-per-view. And what helped is that had a 30-minute time limit, and it came after the first round matches of the TV tournament, which were all under six minutes. Mm-hmm. So it felt like it was going the distance by comparison, so their kickouts felt more epic. And I was glad that Allison Kay finally showed us something, why she was made the champion in the first place, which just so happened to be in the same match that she lost it. And I think the crowd are kind of sensing that Thunder Rosa is better than this team with Melina and Mari Bell, because after that whole dissension, the confusion after the rematch, they had people chanting, you don't need them. And then you've got Melina basically defeating, I don't care what the NWA management says, I don't care how many matches they say I need to win, I'm saying me and Thunder Rosa in the next episode of Power, because I'm Melina and I say so.
It's interesting with Allison Kay. I mean, at the time that we are recording this, actually, because there's been, over the last few months, two women's champions in different organisations who are talented in-ring wrestlers, as they've shown in matches in the past, in Allison Kay and Rio on AEW, who have both now lost their championships. You know, could that be a sign of how both companies realising that we've got talented people here, but we maybe not booked them the way we like, and we need to kind of do something different?
I'd like to think so, because a lot of promotions over the last few years have really taken women's wrestling seriously in the way they book it, and that's probably why it's all the more frustrating when we've seen the first few weeks of Power that they weren't booking it as strong as they had been, because we know that promotions now are capable of that, which makes it all the more frustrating when it doesn't seem like they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So we mentioned that with Allison Kay, but she did prove that she is able to put on a good match. I mean, in terms of Thunder Rosa, I mean, I've said in the past that she could seamlessly fit into pretty much any women's division. Where would you kind of put her currently on the totem pole of the women in the world of professional wrestling, Scott? Would you say she's quite high up there, given her performances as of late?
I think so, yeah. She's really up there, because both her and Althaki, they mentioned that Hard Times had that MMA like background, and I like that more so than the Hard Times match, they implemented that with the submissions in that. So I think her style and her look with Thunder Rosa, you could probably insert her into like any women's division right now, and it would work. I remember actually the day before I watched Hard Times, there was an interview with Alison Kane. She was asked about her and Thunder Rosa's MMA like experience, and she was asked, do you think it was possible if you and Thunder Rosa could do some like mix of wrestling / MMA or maybe even a legit MMA fight? But she said, unfortunately, that wouldn't happen because they're both in different weight classes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a fair point, because you don't really... It would be like putting CM Punk and Brock Lesnar in an MMA style fight, you know. Wrestling, you could put them in a wrestling match and they create a fantastic match. We did see that when the two of them fought at SummerSlam 2013, but if you did an MMA style, it just would not have the same mesh to it. Well, as with the wrestling, obviously, you can kind of script it and tell a bit more of a story and it's not slugfest. And obviously, they've both created two good matches over the last few weeks. In terms of the stable with Melina and Marty Bell, how long do you think it'll be before they pull the trigger and have the turn go on and have them turn on Thunder Rosa and Thunder Rosa become a solid fan favourite?
I think if it doesn't happen by the Crockett Cup, it'll either happen on that show or not long after it, because like it feels like, it seems weird that she didn't want to challenge Allison Kay, but now she's challenging Thunder Rosa. I think maybe the story they're trying to tell is that she used Thunder Rosa to get the belt from Allison Kay because maybe deep down Melina thought it would be easier for her to take the belt from Rosa, so she tried to kind of manipulate her so then she can take the belt for herself, which I think would be a decent story because like you had the teasing that Melina was coming and then she made the debut helping Marty Bell and Thunder Rosa win that tag match, so it would be kind of a good, and what we've said in the past, like the long-term booking that NWA seems to favour.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've kind of flip-flopped a wee bit. That's because it looked like they two were going to turn on Marty, mm-hmm. and now kind of Marty Bell's kind of went back in with that whole with Melina. So it creates a bit of intrigue to that, to everything, and I think they kind of, well, it's good to kind of, they let these three kind of brew these things over, and at the same time, I think they should be establishing the other names a bit more in the division to kind of get them a name up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think with Marty Bell, like you said, they teased that turn on her, but I think her story at the moment is that no matter how negatively she gets treated by Melina, she's blindly loyal to Melina, because like you had an interviewer kind of question their relationship and say something that not so positive about Melina, and she just went off and like, you keep Melina's name out of your mouth, and so basically she's more of a follower at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I'd be interested to see what that kind of goes. We'll talk about your favourite duo, Scott, and Aaron Stevens and the question mark. They seem to have had a bit of a feud going on with the Big Hoss Man himself and Trevor Murdoch. It's led to a few matches. What have you made of these interactions between these two and Murdoch?
Well, there's stuff I liked about what they've been doing the last few weeks, the stuff I don't like. Like, I like that also they're using the fact he's beaten Aaron Stevens and the question mark to get then earn his national title shot, and they talk about how Aaron Stevens is kind of refuses to defend the belt, so he's not exactly a fighting champion, but I didn't like how kind of slow and plodding the whole the match you had with Trevor Murdoch was. I didn't like the fact that it was like you get what they, when it came to the close of the match, you get what they were trying to do. He was trying to run the time limit out, but it wasn't made clear at the time because he kept asking for a time and the commentators kept getting confused, so he just kept throwing Murdoch to the outside. But it did have that good finish where Murdoch, he didn't have enough time to get the cover before the time limit expired. He could have won the title, but also, the question mark's been billed as undefeated since he debuted, and then he lost in the first round to Trevor Murdoch with very little fanfare. It felt like if he was going to lose, it should have been more than what it was.
Yeah, I think they've kind of, I think they're a bit unsure of the way to kind of present the question mark on a permanent basis between guy who looks like he can't get pinned and the kind of comedy character kind of angle they've got with him and Stevens. I think they're kind of torn between the two what to actually kind of go with. And the fact that Stevens is the champion, if they want to keep the champion on him, they need to avoid him getting pins all the time. That's where kind of maybe the question mark might get pins. But at the same time, the question mark is the kind of solid fan favourite. So if they're going to go with the angle they're going, they should probably keep more with the comedy and less with the whole unbeatable, you know, karate machine.
Probably, but I think with Theon's is his promo segments are like some of my favourites every week on Power, but just so far I think his matches haven't been the best, but you can kind of see how that might be by design, because he said when he debuted that he'd been away from the ring for a while, he'd been in Hollywood, so maybe kind of lost a step and he was a bit of a coward, so he's playing that currently like champion role pretty well, but the quality of his matches are kind of suffering because these segments make you look forward to the matches he has, but it kind of you feel slightly underwhelmed when you're watching them.
Scott, I've actually got a question for you on the note of Stevens in question mark. There was the gif of one of the matches in recent weeks on NW Power that went quite viral the other week, where the question mark accidentally hits Stevens with a Mongrovian spike, and then Stevens does the whole sell of the bouncing back and forward off the ropes type idea. There's some people who have said that it's an oversell type idea. What do you make on it based on your observations of the characters that both men have developed on Power?
I think given if you watch what they do on Power, you can tell it's not meant to be taken that seriously, like the whole thing of Mongrovia and like the Tendan karate and all that, and like the idea of the chop with the throat kind of chop. That kind of finisher like looks kind of hokey anyway, but it's treated as like a serious thing.
Yeah,
and it's treated as a devastated move. So obviously, Aaron Stevens is selling it the way he thinks it should be yeah. sold.
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree with you. It pretty much echoes the points I kind of made on it. They've kind of sold that Mongrovian spike as this unstoppable move. So having Stevens do a sort of sell like that, where he literally goes deadpan, you know, absolutely done in, I think it's a solid sell. And of it, I think it's more. People who have commented on that one online, I don't think they probably watch Power on a regular basis and they don't really know what the gimmick is about.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a reactionary thing that you see the gif and you kind of like judge up based on that. You talk about finishers that like are protected. Weirdly, I don't know how I feel about the Bulldog off the middle rope being a finisher for Trevor Murdoch, because he did it to the question mark at Hard Times. He kicked out and then they acted so surprised by it, and then he went right up and did it again. And then he beat the question mark. Like, for some moves that should be protected, I don't know if a bulldog off the middle rope is one of them.
Yeah, I know. Tetsuya Naito's move is the most unprotected move in professional wrestling, but the bulldog might, off the middle rope might come second to it. You never know. It doesn't really look comfortable doing it at times either, which doesn't make things any easier.
Yeah, no, I think they're trying to sell because he's a bigger guy. It's got more impact, but it's him doing the jump off the middle rope, so I don't see how... Like, that's affecting it in any way. Surely he should be doing some sort of move where he kind of lifts him up for some sort of powerbomb, given his size, but, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in the last few months in wrestling, we've had an angle involving romance between Rusev, Lana, and Lashley on WWE, which has been widely panned by many. NWO are doing their own version of a romance. Well, it's our romance. It's Royce Isaacs and his girlfriend, Mae Valentine, with the involvement of her friend and Sal Renano. Scott, what do you make of this whole angle? We're kind of seeing a bit more personality with Royce Isaacs in it, I think, which is a welcome surprise.
Yeah, I was very happy when they established the relationship between him and Mae Valentine, because out of all of them in Trickle Business, he seems to be the one with least character before that point, because Camille, he'd had the story since the start of Power. I think all this was already well established. We knew about Bram and his character work in ICW, and people are familiar with TNA, so they know what he's capable of. But Royce Isaacs seemed the most unfamiliar, and so I think this gave him some much needed like character time and show his personality more. And
yeah,
well, obviously getting to see things from Mae Valentine's perspective when they started doing the segments of the Mae Valentine's Diary.
Yeah, I mean, when they first kind of introduced her as his kind of valet, I wasn't 100% sure about where it would kind of go, because we've said in the past that Royce Isaac looks like a fish out of water at times. Mm-hmm. They compare him to Thomas Latimer. But Sal Renato, it's good to kind of see somebody you come in and make an instant impact. I mean, I'm not going to lie, when I first saw the name, I was a bit confused. I initially thought, is that the guy from Impractical Jokers? I know he's a wrestling fan, but surely they're not going to chuck him into the NWA.
I mean, I would be happy if they did, but, you know, it's unlikely. Yeah, it seems kind of weird that what they're doing with this angle, because Silver Arrow looks like the definition of, like, enhancement talent, and yet he's been featured in this kind of I want to say high profile story. It's kind of been a featured storyline so far, but it seems that they're sliding Royce Isaacs into sort of the Mark Merrill Sable kind of role here.
Yeah, the whole thing with we're all my friends, you know. We're not really, there's no romantic interaction there at all with that. But Isaacs is doing what he should do as a heel in this situation. He is getting jealous.
Yeah.
And he's getting annoyed. And I think that the match will probably happen sooner rather than later. There will probably be some sort of interaction. This is probably what will cost him and Latimer in the Crockett Cup this year. I think there'll be some sort of interaction between these three.
Yeah, probably, because like the whole story is that he's been struggling. Like, he's had success with Latimer and as a tag team, but in singles action he keeps losing week after week, and it's been implied obviously his obsession with May Valentine and keeping her like away from guys like Sal Renato is what's distracting him.
Yeah, definitely. And as we talked about Latimer's doing the stuff, he's helping out Camille with Storm, so it's good that it kind of keeps Isaacs occupied without him actually just being the guy taking pins at the end of the day in the whole thing, even though he probably is going to still take pins because he was in that tag match along with Aldis.
Talking about Camille, I remember, almost forgot this, I remember when I was watching Hard Times, they had that triple threat tag match, so you had May Valentine and Camille at ringside with the wild cards, and Camille kept like holding like one of Robert Gibson, I think it was, from the Rock and Roll Express out of the ring, so he couldn't make a tag, so obviously the wild cards could beat up like Eli Drake, I think it was, and the commentator said that Robert Gibson wasn't fighting back because he has too much class to hit a woman. And then Ricky Morton comes around and swings his foot towards Camille, who avoids it. So all of the implication there, Robert Gibson would never hit a woman. But if they need to, Ricky Morton definitely would.
Yeah. Camille's not like most girls, though, to be fair. No. You did not make a lot of mess with the fight. She's like the modern-day China. She's quite intimidating that way. I don't really know how to judge that thing with Camille. She always comes out dressed. She's always dressed impeccably, but it's like she could still beat the hell out of me.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
I respect that.
Yeah, you could put half the roster in the ring with her, and I'd probably, if you had to get, I had to predict the winner, I'd go with Camille most of the time.
Oh, I'd pretty much beat up pretty much all the roster, you know.
Yeah.
Her versus question mark. That's the match. That's the money match.
Oh, there's your main event for the Crockett Cup right there.
The other part of the show that we're about to talk about is you mentioned that the Hard Times was the crowning of the television champion, and it was a man that you spoke to in great detail, and actually spoke to person to person in Ricky Starks. So you think that was the right call to have him win the championship?
Yeah, definitely, because you want like a new face, like one of the newer guys that you're trying to build up to hold the title. A lot of people seem to think that Zicky Dice would actually win. So it was a big shock when he went out in the first round.
Absolutely battered, though.
Yeah, I think when it was announced that he was going against one of the Free Thoughts, like, it felt like he's been set up to have one of the like newer guys come in and just absolutely battered him. But to be fair to him, he sold that spear from Dan Moff like he'd been cut in half, which he very nearly was. But I like the story of Ricky Starks went through that night, because he had to go through Matt Cross, who was very like even to him and fail with the high flying. A veteran like Tim Storm, and then another veteran in Trevor Murdoch to go through it. So it was a decent story, because especially when he went in that match with Tim Storm, because as I said, Storm got the bye, so he just wrestled a short match against Matt Cross, and then had to go against a fresh opponent in Storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I was agree with you. I think Ricky Starks is the most logical choice to have it, considering how highly regarded he is by a lot of the people in the back, and by a lot of the wrestlers, including the champion Nick Aldis. I mean, what do you make of the kind of rule in terms of title defences, Scott? The kind of, was it the 7-1, 6-1? I can't remember exactly what the number was, that you get so many defences and then you get an automatic shot at the championship.
Yeah, I think the Lucky 7 they were calling it, where
Lucky 7, yeah.
Seven successful defences, you qualify for a shot at the world title. And they said that if the time limit expires, then that is counted as a successful defence, because obviously the champ would keep the title in the event of a time limit draw. I think what they're trying to do is what they used to do with the US title back in WCW, where it was seen that the US champion was seen as the automatic number one contender. So I think they're trying to go with that. And I like that Starks, in his first title defence against Dice, didn't try to run at the time limit. He basically made sure he beat him within the time to show that he could, whereas Matt Cross made a mistake and that led to the time limit expiring, which then gave it starts another step closer to getting a potential title shot.
Yeah, I mean, talking about Matt Cross, I mean, I thought the match between him and Starks last week was absolutely fantastic. I think it was a brilliant villain match. Matt Cross is a guy who's highly underrated, in my opinion. Anytime I've seen him wrestle, he's been absolutely great, and he's a great... He'd be, I think he would fit in any company with that, with the style that he's got.
Yeah, he seems to. I mean, I remember we seen him at ICW against Mark Coffey, which was a great match, and the NWA fans seemed to have taken to him quite quickly, even so that the match was, the crowd was fairly split in that TV title match with Ricky Starks. The thing I'm wondering about this 7-1 thing is I'm kind of conflicted in that, obviously, as the first champion, I'd like to see Ricky hold on to the title for a while, but part of me wants it to be a while before someone completes the 7-1 and then tell it as a story where they keep having champions get so close, but around that, like, when they have, like, one away or two away from the, like, lucky seven, they keep losing the title.
Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure. Is the ruling like what the X Division Championship ruling on TNA? Did they drop the title with the shot, or did they still keep the title? Have they mentioned that at all?
I don't think they have, but that is an interesting question, because I was thinking about myself the other day, because I remember when Storm was trying to get a title shot against Nick Aldis when he was still national champion. Aldis said that he would have to, like, give up the national belt to get a shot on him because he wanted him to have everything to lose. I could see them doing a similar situation to that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what, if Aldis is still the champion, he's the guy who wants people to put up the big stakes to kind of have a shot at him. So it is highly plausible that that kind of thing can be done. I mean, the match, obviously, with Ricky Starks and Matt Cross that last week, it went to a no finish with the time limit going out. Do you see these two maybe having a match at the Crockett Cup?
I could actually see it, given that Ziggy Dice came out, even though he lost, like, fairly decisively to Ricky Starks, he's still, like hanging around the title scene. I could see it being some sort of triple threat match, but I'm wondering if that'll, if it's on pay-per-view, if it'll still be a 6:05 time limit, because I'd be interested to see how they would do, like, a triple threat style match in under 6 minutes.
Yeah, that would be completely different. I mean, triple threat matches themselves are quite hard to kind of book, so they don't usually take about... They're usually about a minimum 10 minutes the time I see them. You know, you don't really get such thing as a quick fire triple threat, given the whole, obviously, the fact there's three guys in the ring, or three women in the ring.
Because the format seems to be somebody takes a break on the outside while two people wrestle, and then someone comes in and someone else takes a break. But I think, and some people kind of don't like that still, that makes triple threats a bit repetitive, and I can see why some people think that. So I think having it under this time limit would create more of a sense of urgency, which would kind of fix that problem.
Yeah, definitely. But it'll be interesting to kind of see where they go. But we won't actually know about that one, Scott, for another 2 weeks, because next week NWA Power's taking a short break as they're going to be debuting their new kind of reality show that we've talked about in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this Circle Squared, and they said that the fans have, like, a part in, like, deciding who gets a spot on the roster.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, because I've not actually really announced any details about who's going to be in this kind of reality type of show, so it will be quite interesting to see who gets picked and who actually is going to be in the kind of fight there. You can see maybe some guys in Ring of Honor type ideas, so maybe some guys have been fighting on independence, maybe some guys in Europe.
Yeah, I like to see like a good mix of stars. Like, I remember they had those that guy Danny Deals, who was doing the ads during Episode of Power, but they'd have an actual wrestler cutting a promo and then he would basically interrupt them, and he seemed like the JD Drake from Evolve. And there, I'd like to see like the NWA Power, maybe someone like a Sugar Duncan, who's seen retweeting the tweet when the initial thing about announcing Circle Square came out. You've seen Sugar Duncan retweeting it, so I'd like to see him in there.
Yeah, JD Drake would be looks like a guy who would fit in so well in an NWA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's got the same thing that Trevor Murdoch in that. I've got like that old school like Southern wrestler look, kind of like your Dusty Rhodes or your Harley Races kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. He's another underrated professional. The guy we talked about from Scotland, the best one was Jackie Polo. I think given the kind of development since that initial point, I don't really see Polo being a guy in there. But somebody from Britain could show up, you know. You never know. There's a surprise factor in there.
Yeah, definitely. Because like, I like to see them like take kind of a mix of people from like all over the world. Because the wrestling scene like is more expansive than it's ever been at the moment. So I'd like to see like a different kind of, like, something that they haven't had before coming there, because they're talking about how Thunder Rosa was like the first Mexican-born champion in the history of the NWA, so I'd like to see them go like more international.
Yeah, definitely. No, you'll find out very soon how that's actually going to go. As I say, it's going to be on next week, and it's something we'll be talking about when we return on the Power Trip in a few weeks' time. We'll talk about that and in the next few weeks' worth of NWA Power shows. So if you have enjoyed what you've heard from this show and you've never watched NWA Power, it's on YouTube, so go on there and watch and catch up. There's 18 episodes worth on there, and there's plenty of great stuff, plus two pay-per-views if you want to find them. They're available on Fight TV. And if you have enjoyed it just as a fan of NWA or just a fan of us in general, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Suplex Retweet. You can subscribe to the Suplex Retweet extra feed and our main feed. Just search for Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet on any good podcasting platform. As always, I'd like to thank Scott McLeod for joining me, for taking this trip through Mongrovia into NWA.
Thank you very much.
Hopefully you get that third Dan in Mongrovian Karate, Scott, when we return.
Hopefully, you know, I've made some mistakes. I won't make that same mistake again.
Absolutely. But from us at the Power Trip, I've been Stephen Wilson, and we'll see you next time.